Coming up on Philosophy Talk...
To all noble and worthy ladies...
The life and thought of Margaret Cavendish.
This present description of a new world was made as an appendix to my observations upon experimental philosophy, and, having some sympathy and coherence with each other, were joined together as two several worlds at their two poles.
Can you do philosophy in poetry, or theater, or utopian fiction?
By this poetical description, you may perceive that my ambition is not only to be empress, but authoress of a whole world.
What would it mean to believe in the radical equality of everything?
What made Cavendish think we're no different from rocks and trees?
She's a very creative and experimental thinker.
Our guest is Karen Detlefsen from the University of Pennsylvania.
Though I cannot be Henry V or Charles II, I will endeavor to be Margaret I.
Margaret Cavendish, coming up on Philosophy Talk.
What would it mean to believe in radical equality?
Did Margaret Cavendish really think we're no better than ants, trees, and rocks?
And what about the equality of men and women?
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Josh Landy.
And I'm Ray Briggs. We're coming to you from the studios of KALW San Francisco Bay Area.
Continuing conversations that begin at Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus, where Ray teaches philosophy, and I direct the Philosophy and Literature Initiative.
Today, it's the next episode in our Wise Women series, generously supported by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. We're talking about the life and thought of Margaret Cavendish.
Right, so she was Duchess of Newcastle in the 17th century and a fascinating polymath. She had this radical idea that everything in the universe thinks, even amoebas, rocks, trees, dust.
Yeah, that was incredibly radical for her time. Back then, most philosophers didn't believe that matter could ever think. Not even the matter in my brain.
Right, like Descartes, for example, right, who's writing it around the same time. He said, your soul is a completely different kind of thing from your body. Yet your body moves around in space, but it can't think. Your soul thinks, but it can't move through space because it's not made of matter.
But Cavendish said there was just one kind of thing, matter. She said, whatsoever is not material is no part of nature. And matter is intelligent, sensitive, even rational.
Wait a minute. You're telling me my coffee cup is rational?
Well, it's holding your coffee. Could you do that by yourself? Yeah, I didn't think so.
Okay, Ray, but my mug isn't deciding to hold the coffee. I put it in there and I can pour it out again. I'm the one in control here.
Ah, there's where you're wrong. Cavendish says the mug is deciding to stay there and hold your coffee. And it's deciding to move to your mouth when you drink. You can't move things. They can only move themselves.
So you mean the mug has to want to change? I mean, that's a nice principle for psychotherapy and all, but does it really apply to inanimate objects?
Well, look at you, Mr. High and Mighty Master of the Universe. You know what Cavendish says about you? She says, he would fain be supreme and above all other creatures. She says we love to think we're special, but really, we're no better than anything else, no better than the rest of the matter in the universe.
Well, there's a part of that I really like. I mean, the part where Cavendish says we're no better than ants or bees. She says, I cannot perceive more abilities in man than in the rest of natural creatures. For though he can build a stately house, yet he cannot make a honeycomb. That is just wonderful. But again, does it really apply to my coffee cup? Next thing you'll be telling me is it has feelings.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It cries every time you leave it in the sink and don't wash it. Maybe you should be nicer to the dishes.
I think maybe I'll start by being nicer to my fellow human beings.
Yeah, about that. Cavendish had a lot to tell her contemporaries about how to be nicer to women.
Right. She saw men treating women as inferior beings, capable only of doing housework and being pretty ornaments. We are kept like birds in cages to hop up and down in our houses.
It's kind of heartbreaking. She wrote all these philosophical and scientific treatises, and the men around her just ignored them. She wrote letters about their philosophical ideas, and they didn't write back.
That's true, but in her fiction, she got to live out a very different reality. She has this fantastic science fiction novel, The Blazing World, where the main character becomes an empress and has smart conversations about astronomy and chemistry and even saves her adoring citizens from an attack.
Yeah, writing those novels was a great way to exercise her own freedom. I love that line in her preface, though I cannot be Henry V, or Charles II, yet I endeavor to be Margaret I.
That is so great. But Ray, I'm still confused about my coffee cup.
Well, I bet our guest can help you understand. It's Karin Detlefsen, professor of philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania.
But first, what do today's novelists have to say about Margaret Cavendish? We sent our roving philosophical reporter, Holly J. McDeed, to find out. She files this report.
What a vision of loneliness and riot the thought of Margaret Cavendish brings to mind.
It was in Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own that writer Danielle Dudden first encountered Margaret Cavendish.
And she describes her as being like a carnation, I think. No, a cucumber, that's it. That's what's so important.
As if some giant cucumber had spread itself all over the roses and carnations in the garden and choked them to death.
It was such a bizarre and honestly kind of weirdly phallic description of Cavendish.
Years later, Dudden started her PhD and took a class on the poetics and historiography of the 17th century. She got really into 17th century gardens. But everything Dudden wrote kept leading her back to Margaret Cavendish, the Duchess of Newcastle and a prolific writer.
Like, she was in every garden I was writing about.
So Dudden spent about 10 years writing a novel about Cavendish called Margaret the First, a Novel. The book is fiction, drawn from Cavendish's real life. All the excerpts you're going to hear are from Dudden's book, like this one.
For all these fertile inner workings, Margaret was thought plain, couldn't wear yellow, was shy. Yes, seemed younger than her years. Yet Margaret longed for fame. When grown, she would adorn herself like a peacock.
She wrote that stuff about, on the one hand, desiring ambition and fame, and on the other hand, feeling like they were meaningless. You know, she struggled with that desire, I think, and she was notorious in her own era.
These were interesting times.
The King of England was convicted of treason. Then the King of England was dead. It was Tuesday. It was 1649.
While in France, Margaret met William Cavendish, athlete, scholar, and the first Duke of Newcastle. The pair wed in 1645 while in exile in Paris. And while Cavendish had little formal education, she read and read and wrote and wrote. She even wrote her husband's biography. Cavendish loved philosophy. Dudden was intrigued by her thoughts on the French philosopher Descartes.
He thought the universe was like a machine, the body like a clock. He'd once nailed his wife's poodle to a board. He believed nothing could think or feel but man. But how could he know a poodle didn't feel? Or even a magnet? A vase? Now he was gone, and I ate my bread. While one book in the world might be considered an anomaly, two books, it seemed, sounded an alarm. The lady is a fraud. Even if the books were ridiculous, how could a woman speak the language of philosophy at all?
Defending a second book quickly led to a third, Philosophical and Physical Opinions, 1655. In it, I argued all matter can think, a woman, a river, a bird. There is no creature or part of nature without innate sense and reason, I wrote, for observe the way a crystal spreads, or how a flower makes way for its seed. I shared each page with William, often before the ink had dried. It put me at odds, he explained, with the prevailing thought of the day.
How could the world be wound up like a clock? The fictional Cavendish wonders, pulsing, contracting, attracting, and generating infinite forms of knowledge. In 1666, Cavendish published The Blazing World, about a utopian kingdom in another world that could be reached through the North Pole.
The blazing world with its blazing sky and river of liquid crystal, its gowns of alien starstone, its talking bears and spiders. William has told her it's her finest work, and even composed a poem to include.
You conquer death in a perpetual life, and make me famous too in such a wife.
The next year, Margaret became the first woman to attend a meeting at the Royal Society of London, a feat not repeated for centuries.
And then when she got there, she basically didn't say anything.
She'd arrived 20 minutes late, so she sits there still. Hook has finished and the room awaits her reply. But the Duchess only sits, looking into the device. That hat is too much, Pepys thinks. Still, her shape is fine. At last, she lifts her head. What ingenious remark will she make?
Gentlemen,
she says.
I am all admiration.
She rises from her chair.
I am all admiration,
she says again. She nods stiffly, as if wishing them well. She looks to Lord Bronker, who stands, surprised, and leads her to the door.
People call her Mad Madge, but Danielle Dudden wrote her novel with a lot of love and respect for Cavendish.
Margaret wanted the whole house to move 3 feet to the left. It was indescribable what she wanted. She was restless. She wanted to work. She wanted to be 30 people. She wanted to wear a cap of pearls and a coat of bright blue diamonds.
Cavendish wanted to live in many ages and in many brains, and would likely get a kick out of being resurrected in fiction and on the radio. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
You can listen to the rest of this episode by purchasing it on iTunes Music. Or for unlimited listening, subscribe to our archive at philosophytalk.org.